This might be one of my biggest Locked On Kings podcasts ever. On today's show, Steve Javi, a former NBA official of 25 seasons, now an ABC and ESPN NBA official analyst, joins me to talk about the Tyler Hero missed call, the Klay Thompson missed call, and any potential officiating bias towards the Sacramento Kings. It's right here on Locked On Kings.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all offseason today, presented by Sweatblock. If you or someone you love is experiencing embarrassing sweat or odor, try Sweatblock. You can save 20% with promo code LOCKEDON at sweatblock.com, also available on Amazon. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm a Sacramento sports producer and reporter at ABC 10 News, and I was so excited to be able to get Steve Javi, former NBA official, now NBA officiating analyst for ESPN and ABC. You might have seen him on TV a number of times during the Golden State Warriors-Boston Celtics NBA Finals broadcast on ABC earlier this year. Steve is phenomenal. He had an amazing career as an NBA official, someone who I respect a lot, even if I'm sure he's made calls over his lifetime that, as a Kings fan, I've adamantly disagreed with. Maybe or maybe not, he's received a suck chant from me and many of you in his time in the NBA, but he's been retired for a while. But what I appreciate about Steve is he's very transparent. He's very open and honest about mistakes that he's made, mistakes that officials make. So to get his opinions, to get his comments on what the Sacramento Kings have faced from the officials and this perceived bias, according to head coach Mike Brown, of officials officiating the Kings differently or expecting the Kings to lose because they are the Sacramento Kings. The words that he says carry weight, the words that we agree with and the words that we disagree with. And there's going to be a lot of both in this conversation. I'm going to get out of the way. I'm so excited for you to hear it. You're going to want to listen to the whole thing. Steve Javi right here on Locked On Kings. What a treat. It is a pleasure to be joined by Steve Javi, a former NBA official with 25 seasons of experience, now provides analysis for ABC and ESPN, mainly ESPN, covering the NBA and giving us kind of some insight on what it's like to actually be an official. And of course, the officials and NBA officiating, a hot topic here in Sacramento at the moment. So Steve, welcome in. It's a pleasure to have you. I really appreciate you making the time.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, Steve, first and foremost, I know you've seen the two hot button calls that we're going to talk about, the Tyler Hero travel that was a no call and the most recent Klay Thompson foul of Kevin Huerter that was a no call. Before we dive into anything about the last 2 minute report or anything like that, what are your initial thoughts just watching those plays?
Well, first of all, there's very two difficult plays. There's no doubt. The first one, the one that travel you're talking about with Hero, it's one that I don't think there's many referees would ever make that call, or I shouldn't say, because they wouldn't see the call. And the reason being, Matt, is that Hero's being guarded pretty closely by the defender of the Kings. And so your focus as a referee is really not in this situation on the feet. Your focus has to be either on the feet or the defender. And if you take your eyes off the defender and go to the feet, maybe the guy gets fouled. If you take your eyes off the feet and go to the defender, maybe he walked. And in this situation, when you run it back frame by frame, he technically does travel. So it's a missed call in that situation. But I don't know many referees. And I know one thing. I wasn't the best at traveling when I was refereeing. I know I probably missed more when I called travels than when I didn't call travels. So this one is really a difficult call. And I would really challenge any referee to say, yeah, there it is. And I would have made that call because it's really difficult.
With the Tyler Hero one, though, if you're not watching the feet, you're watching the defender to see if there's a foul. I understand that completely. Is there someone else or another official elsewhere that's supposed to keep an eye on the feet? Because what about making sure that the toe's not on the line or that it's actually a 3-point basket instead of a two? In this case, it was pretty obvious Tyler was behind the line, but is someone supposed to be keeping an eye on that, or is that left to almost judgment?
Yeah, that's a good question. Everybody, obviously, three referees on the court, they all have three areas of responsibility. where the ball is in this situation. Unfortunately, it's the Trails official to live, if you want to say live or die with, whatever it may be. The other officials have their own areas of responsibility. I tell you one thing, Matt. I watched that over and over, and I had to watch it even in slow motion again to see, oh, did he? Yeah, he did lift that left foot. So in real time when it happens, even if somebody was watching it, I have a difficult time anybody could put air in the whistle and say it was a trap.
Well, Steve, to be completely honest with you, I said after that game, too, that I was okay with the non-call. I didn't see it in real time. You watch it back, it is a travel. Now, Mike Brown did see it in real time, and that's a conversation that we'll get to a little bit later on. To me, the Klay Thompson foul of Kevin Huerter was more egregious than the Tyler Herro situation. What did you think about that? Because not only does Klay foul Tyler, Klay foul Kevin, he actually makes contact with Kevin multiple times in one jump shot.
Yeah, it's a situation where, you know, as an official, and I was looking at the angle of the official, because that's what I always look at when I used to miss plays. I looked at my angle and see where I was. And 9 times out of 10, he didn't have the great angle. In this situation, you know, he was the official administering the throw-in at the time. He administers it and actually takes a step down to get a pretty decent angle on it. Sometimes plays just eat you up. It gets quick on you, and you just don't put air in the whistle. So, unfortunately, as I say to everybody all the time, we miss calls. Unfortunately, at the end of the game is not the time when you want to miss it. But I know the feeling, and believe me, that official, after seeing that play when he went to the locker room, probably didn't sleep a wink that night.
The last two-minute report did not exist when you were officiating. It exists now. Most people can't stand it. And I imagine officials can't stand it either, even if it's the league recognizing missed calls or at least being transparent with missed calls at the end of games. Nothing changes. It doesn't really do anything. It's like an admitted mistake, but oh well, it's too late to fix at that point. What's your opinion of the last two-minute report, and how would you have appreciated it or not appreciated it if it were around during your time?
Yeah, I'm not a big proponent of it myself. My personal opinion, I don't think I ever have been. Everything that you just said, Matt, it's hard not to agree with. If I miss a call or the officiating staff missed a call, then you call the general manager or coach and say, hey, guys, they missed it. I think what the process was here with, the, as you said, transparency. And I actually believe that the league was trying to show the fans that a large percentage of the time, even in the last 2 minutes, the officials are correct. Unfortunately, in this situation, in both these games, when I looked at the last 2 minutes report, in the Miami game, there was one missed call, and the other, there was two missed calls, and that was it for the last 2 minutes. Unfortunately, they all went against Sacramento, and that's the unfortunate thing. But, I just think that, you know what, you're never going to satisfy anybody. Mike Brown doesn't feel better because the league put it in their last two-minute report. No coach would feel better. But I just it's one of these things that the league feels that they want to be transparent about, and there's nothing really an official can do about it.
I know NBA officials are human, and I've said this on the air, and I'll say this again, because I firmly believe that human officials with human error is far better than any technology or robotic replay system or anything that they could implement, like maybe they're trying to do in baseball or whatever it is. Like I fully prefer human officials, and that means the human error element with it. But a lot of fans are curious if there is some kind of accountability that officials are held to, not necessarily like punishment for getting calls wrong, because these are different officiating crews, right? Between the Miami game and the Golden State game. So it's not the same guy or group of three that are screwing over the Kings necessarily, but how are officials held accountable when big calls are missed at ends of games?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. We as officials, and I know because of the end of the game, the time of the game, and so on. Big calls are at the end of the game, there's no doubt. But the officials right now are probably scrutinized a lot more than when I was in there. They have people right now, Matt, every game that's played, every bounce is evaluated. Every call, every non-call, and it's recorded. It gets looked over by the referee operations department. Every official gets graded every game for the percentage of calls they get right. How they are held accountable is the fact that these statistics are then put in the mix when it comes to, say, playoff assignments. So if somebody – now, it doesn't help you at this last game that you lost, but the referee is being held accountable, because if he continues to make a mistake or his percentages are down, he'll not advance, say, to the playoff round 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it may be. That in consequence, now leads to money out of his pocket. Mm-hmm. Every round you go to in a playoff is extra bonus for that official. So there is incentive, obviously, to get every call possibly right you can. And, you know, because when people say, well, they made up calls and they missed calls on this end, they're going to make up that call. No, because if I do that, I'm taking money out of my own pocket because my rating dips. So that's the accountability factor right there, Matt, is the fact that, you know, they're trying to do the best they can to try to get to the playoffs to earn extra money for their families.
So the rating system is interesting. Is there a, like an in-season almost train, like the best way that I can make it make sense in my brain, and it probably doesn't exist at all, is like the idea of traffic school, right? When you get a ticket, you go back to traffic school and it helps you kind of get rid of that ticket, right? So is there like a warning system in place, or like if officials frequently miss specific calls that they sit down and review and go over? And it could be something like a foul. It could be something like a travel, the new take foul rule. Like, are there specific instances over the course of a season where if there's a specific call that officials are struggling with, they will sit down and review that and maybe retrain that, I guess?
No, that's a great point. And yes, there is. The short answer to your question is yes, there is. Because each official has a person from the referee operations department as their mentor or coach. And this coach or mentor, I'm just putting a simple terminology on it, reviews the plays of his. He's responsible, let's say, for 12 officials. And he's always watching these 12 officials. And if it pops up that maybe this one official is deficient when he's at the lead position or the trail position, or maybe, as you said, traveling violations where he's just not getting it, that mentor will call him up. And they will sit down and they'll watch film together, talk about it, and just try to get them back on track. Obviously, the officials themselves should be objective enough that when you're watching film, which you should be watching just about every game you do, especially plays you think you might have gotten right or maybe wrong that were difficult plays, you should be objective enough to say, geez, why did I miss that play? I mean, that's one thing I always tell even young officials. The most important thing is to be objective, to admit your mistakes, but then find out, why did I miss that mistake? Why wasn't I ready for it? Was I out of position? Whatever it may be. But yes, there are safeguards like that, Matt, in there that help the official to try to overcome any deficiencies they have during the course of the year.
When those calls are missed, is it frequent to have those behind the scenes conversations, official to coach, like, hey, man, I apologize, I missed that. Or even official to player, I apologize, I missed that. And maybe even vice versa. If an official or a coach yells at an official for a perceived missed call that was actually the correct call, coach apologizes to official. Is that pretty common in the NBA?
You know, it happens. And you have, as an official, I learned my lesson sometimes the hard way. One time, and I won't mention the coach's name, I blew the whistle and I really didn't like the call. And I said, coach was complaining. I said, coach, you may be right. I think I missed it. He said, you're not paid to miss the calls. Mm-hmm. I went, okay, fine. You know, so I put that in the back of my mind. I said, I won't say that to this coach, but I think the majority of coaches respect the fact that if you believe that you missed a call, and you can't keep saying it every quarter though, you can't keep going to the coach, I think I missed it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think if you're honest with the coach and just say, hey coach, I could have kicked that player. You know what? I'll check it out on tape. I thought I was right. I didn't have the angle you had, or I had a better angle. There is conversations like that, and with players also. And with the computers in the locker room nowadays, it's really pretty good because you get the feedback, say, at halftime. Officials will go in at halftime, and there's always a half a dozen plays or so that they want to look at. And then they look at it at halftime, they'll go back out, and a player or coach might even say, hey, did you take a look at that play? I did. Yeah, you know what? You were right. I was wrong. That's okay. Thanks very much. So I think being honest is the best thing.
Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast, like I mentioned at the top of the show, is brought to you by Sweatblock. Now, when I was a kid and going through even teenage years, I didn't sweat too much. But when I started playing golf for some reason, I don't know if it's just the humidity. I don't know if it's the grass. I don't know if it's the water. I don't know what the hell. Maybe it's the fact that I'm nervous over every shot. I sweat a ton when I golf, and I've used Sweatblock mid-round, and it's had instant positive effects on me. And it's not like a deodorant stick. Sweatblock wipes are this little secret to confidence. They work for up to 7 days per use, and you apply them on a Sunday, for example, and you will be dry all week long. If you or someone you love is experiencing embarrassing sweat or odor, you need to try SweatBlock. You can save 20% with promo code LOCKEDON at sweatblock.com right now. It's also available on Amazon. Get rid of those that unnecessary odor. Get rid of those embarrassing sweat stains that appear out of nowhere. SweatBlock will take care of them for you. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at sweatblock.com. Speaking of coaches, Mike Brown has been very open with his comments after both the Tyler Hero travel and the Klay Thompson foul. And the main thing that I've taken away from his comments is this is his first year coaching the Sacramento Kings. He comes from years of being with the Golden State Warriors. So he's now seeing both sides, both perspectives. He's brought up now a potential perceived bias or preconceived notion that because the Sacramento Kings have lost for 16 years, because the Kings are the Kings, they're expected to lose against a defending champion like the Golden State Warriors or against a team with NBA championship aspirations like the Miami Heat. Do you think that there's any ground to that? There's any potential of that, or even if it's subconscious by officials, that there could be a bias that they bring in, not knowing or unaware of the fact that they expect the Kings to lose, just like most fans. And if you're a better, you expect the Kings to lose when they take on the Golden State Warriors in San Francisco.
A couple of things, Matt. First, number one, Mike Brown is such a class guy and a great man. He really is. I've known Mike for years. And I wish him all the success in the world because he's a class act. And I can imagine his frustration. There's no doubt. And he is frustrated. Mike knows, and I know if you were to talk to him or if I were to talk to him, he knows that just from his experience with us as officials, that we don't go into game with any preconceived notion or biases or saying, oh, because Sacramento's that bad. I just truly believe he's just frustrated. If he denies that, I'd say then he's changed. He's a changed man. But no, it's funny. Where I look at where he came from, like you said, with the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr, even with the team that he had for a number of years, had led the league in technical fouls.
Yeah.
That goes against almost everything where the question we brought up. But just in a short sense, Matt, and I know that, God rest his soul, my father, who was an official in the NFL for 30 years, he and I would talk a lot when I was in the league. And anytime I tried to explain to somebody how a referee really feels or what he's thinking, my father would look at me and say, Steve, unless somebody officiated, they're really not going to understand you. And it's true. But I will say that from an officiating point of view, Matt, and whether your fans listening will sit there and say, oh, Javi, you're full of it and so on. We go into games, and believe me, the top of our list is to try to get as many calls right as we can. Every player who takes a shot doesn't sit there and try to miss that shot. Now, unfortunately, if he makes 45, 50%, it's a great game for him. If a referee shoots 45 or 50% of the game, he has no job. I mean, so our goal is to get into the game. Our mentality is, the concentration to the level of what these professional players deserve. And so all this other noise, all this other stuff, even like when playoffs come or you're thinking about that, no, man, I am thinking about trying to get as many plays right. I know the teams. Yes, I know the matchups. Yes, I know my job, my responsibilities, my fundamentals. I put them to the best practice I can that night and try to get as many calls right as I can, regardless of what team it is.
Well, that might be an exact answer that you would give to the next question that I was going to ask, which is about any kind of star bias or preferential call treatment towards stars. And this is a pretty universally accepted topic around fan circles and media circles that players like Steph Curry, players like James Harden, those stars get preferential foul treatment compared to a journeyman in the league, a role player or a young player who's trying to establish themselves. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, Steve, watching it, I see this pretty openly. And I'll give you an example of like the Golden State Warriors game. Steph Curry thought he was fouled. He was fouled. He was fouled by Malik Monk, didn't like the call, went right at what one of the officials, and I'm blanking on his name, and got right in his face and yelled. Now, got a technical foul, but a lot of other players, they do that in the league, they're ejected. Steph Curry was not. That's just a circumstance or an example that I'm bringing up. What are your opinions on when you hear people like myself, people like fans saying, oh, there's preferential treatment for star players? Do you admit maybe there is some, or is that a narrative that we create maybe to make ourselves feel better?
Well, I like the latter part, the narrative to make yourself feel better. If that ever came into my psyche, my mentality, I would never be able to referee the game. I remember once I'm telling Michael Jordan just exactly what you just said. hey, Michael, they think you get preferential treatment. He looked at me and said, you're kidding me, aren't you? More times than anybody else. If you were to ask LeBron James this question right now, this moment in time, you get the preferential calls, he'd be laughing at you because he thinks he gets fouled even more than what he does. So as people are saying that, the superstar per se that they're talking about believes that he doesn't get a break at all and just thinks because I'm bigger, I'm stronger. Shaquille O'Neal thought he got fouled all the time because he's so big. So I truly believe that if a referee puts that into his mind, he's never going to be a very good professional referee, okay, whatsoever. The other thing I'd like to say too, Matt, is the fact that when you talk about superstars, guys like a Steph Curry, a LeBron James, Michael Jordan, calls are going to be missed for or against them probably more than the 12th man because the guy, the superstar, is going to be handling the ball 70% of the time, 80% of the time. Referees miss calls. Most likely it's going to be for or against the person who handles the ball more so than that guy who's the 12th man on the bench who gets off one jump shot a game. Again, preface everything by saying referees miss calls every night. I miss calls, I would say every quarter. Back to your initial question. I never felt that way. I would never want it to be perceived, even though it is perceived that way. And if any referee does that to say in their mind, I want to give preferential treatment, then they're not that good of a referee.
This episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is also brought to you by Bet Online, the number one source for all your sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Bet Online is the number one place to go to bet on Sacramento Kings games. Like, how you feeling about Kings and Cavaliers tonight? Well, the Kings are underdogs, but they're on their home floor, maybe playing with a chip on their shoulder a little bit after how the Warriors game ended. Check out the Kings and Cavaliers line. You can place your bet on that. You can place your bet on any NBA game, any NFL game, college sports as well. Even like niche sports like golf, MMA, boxing, they have it all. You can get all the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. And if you love sports podcasts, you can also find those on Bet Online as well, including Locked On Kings. We're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. Bet Online. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. Bet Online, where the game starts. Before we wrap up, I have a couple more questions for you. One of them is you hear former players talking about the difference of eras, how much more physical the game was when you were officiating versus how it is today. And you hear former players saying, hey, if this player played in my league, no chance he'd get that shot off. They talk about Steph Curry a lot like that. And then you have players in this era saying, I could still score on you no matter who you are. But from an officiating perspective, the physicality of the league back then compared to I don't think skill is the right word, but it's more skill focus, shooting focus, kind of speed. Do you think it was easier or is easier to referee one era over the other? Or how would you compare the two eras from an officiating perspective?
Yeah, interesting. Because I think in both scenarios, you can say it's more difficult than one era. And here's the thing. You are correct when you were saying when I broke in the late 80s, went to the 90s, 2000. I mean, we had some physical game. I mean, when you think about it, with the exception sometimes of the Sacramento Kings, and when they would play the Phoenix Suns and they'd be 130 to 128.
Right.
As a referee, we loved when we went there because you didn't have to worry about like the 90 to 88 games, you know? But no, you're right. I think it was much more physical. The league by rules allowed more physicality during the, say, 80s, 90s, and the early 2000s. Then they realized, you know what? Let's get this product back to where it's more of a, you know, talent level and so on and so forth, show their skills. So I think from a physicality aspect, it was much more difficult to referee a game when it's 85 to 80 than it is 130 to 128. The thing that makes today a little more difficult, Matt, is all the different angles of the cameras that you get. I mean, now you have the replay center, okay? I'm at the replay center when I'm working for ESPN and ABC, and I have, like, my gosh, 15, 20 different angles I can take a look at plays. So I think it becomes more difficult there with regard to, you know, calling fouls and so on and so forth. And therefore, the scrutiny, you're under more scrutiny, I think, now because of all the different camera angles and the way cameras can make things just zoom in on this foot, zoom in on that arm, zoom in on that elbow, whatever it may be. But physicality-wise, I think it was a much, much harder game to referee, you know, back in the era that I refereed.
Finally, Steve, for our listeners, if they were to – look you up, Google your name, one of the first pictures that would come up is a picture of you talking with Vlade Divac when he was a player here in Sacramento. If you YouTube your name, there are different segments of you being wired up during games, which I thought was phenomenal. And there's so many clips of you officiating games in Arco Arena. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but what do you remember from officiating the best era of Sacramento Kings basketball, certainly, but officiating games in that building that has just recently been torn down, Steve? That building no longer exists.
That's sad. That really is. So many great memories. I mean, and I think I told you before, I think I lost some of my hearing because of those cowbells. I mean, it was amazing. I don't know if the league banned that at one time or not, but I had some great memories with the Kings there, especially the time the playoff runs they've had. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Very, very loud, Matt. Very loud.
Well, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time, lending your perspective. I know you said some things that Kings fans and NBA fans in general aren't necessarily going to agree with, but that's what's important to get that perspective. So really appreciate the work that you do on ABC and ESPN. Fantastic work during the finals of the Warriors and Celtics not too long ago. So to have you on and to have you join me is a real pleasure. So thank you very much.
That is my pleasure. Anytime you need anything, just give a holler, buddy. I'm here for you.
Again, having Steve on was just an incredible pleasure. It was a total shot in the dark to reach out. He was so generous with his time, got back to me, was willing to spend time, is willing to come back on in the future. I talked to him a little bit after the podcast was over about 2002, the Western Conference Finals. He said he'd be willing to talk about it. So if you want for us to reopen that wound and get his opinions on the situation. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Steve did officiate some of those games. He didn't officiate game 6. Don't worry. I don't think he officiated game 7. Either, but Steve was involved, and that was his era of refereeing during that 2002 period and when the Kings were in their heyday. So if you want him back on and for us to talk about that, plus any officiating questions or topics that you have, I'd be happy to have him back on. Maybe it'd be fun to do like an officiating question and answers podcast with him. He's willing to come back on. I'm willing to do it in the future. So let me know if you want that. Really appreciate your support of the podcast today. There will be a podcast later, late tonight, maybe early hours of the morning tomorrow after the Kings and Cavaliers game. I will be at that game. If you're coming, please come by and say hi. I would love to see you. And thank you for listening to Locked On Kings. But for right now, we are done. My name is Matt George. You have been listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.